low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Pat Connolly, and for the next hour I'll be reading from current issues of the Lockport Union Sun and Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And let's start out with the death notices from about a week's worth of newspapers. In the August 8th and 9th issue, page 3, the deaths are announced of Alice B. Remus, March 19th, 1926 to August 2nd, 2026 in Gasport, and of Leonard H. Sarusa, July 19th, 1961 to August 5th, 2026, apparently of Lockport. In the issue of August 11th, again page 3, Ashley R. Robichard and Emerson E. Robichard, August 6th, 2026. The August 13th issue announces the deaths of Brian P. Goldthorpe, September 21st, 1949 to August 7th, 2026, and Tammy Maria Rosado, July 31st, 1969 to August 8th, 2026. The weekend issue of August 15th and 16th announces the deaths of Rose M. Edwards, August 18th, 1942 to August 7th, 2026, and Cheryl D. Bolton, January 11th, 1951 to August 10th, 2026. If you would like to have an obit read to you, please do call the Radio Reading Service at 716-821-5555, and a staff member will read the obit to you. Going now to the articles in the newspapers, and starting with the August 6th Union Sun. Village at Canaan to support families in meeting essential needs. New program kicking off in September at former Montessori school building by Heidi Truschel Light. Many of us have heard that it takes a village to raise a child. The question for some parents is, how do you contact the village? Starting in September, a new program called The Village at Canaan will answer that question by offering free drop-in play groups and parent education workshops and parent support groups at the former Montessori school building on Locust Street. Ashley Green, founding director of the program, said the Village at Canaan will also function as a referral hub for families to get their essential needs met. She said families could take advantage of a playgroup for children up to age 7 and at the same time talk to a staff member and get connected with free diapers, a stroller, car seat, or furniture. Quoting, "We can help them through a health insurance application," Green said. "I hope to reach people before the crisis point. We want to help families get to where they need to go." Green said the location will be open during the day Monday to Friday, eventually with one evening until 7 p.m. "The sky's the limit," said Bill Paddy, executive director of the Canaan Center. "We're going to see how this grows in the next 12 months. An important goal of the program," Green said, "is reducing parents' and caregivers' feelings of isolation and loneliness." Skipping through the rest of that article, I bring you to the contact information, which is community members can find out more by following the Canaan Center at www.facebook.com/Canaan Lockport. still from page one of the August 6th Union Sun-In Journal. Superfund law change sought. Senator Ort also urging DEC to give homes a clean bill of health where applicable, by Robert Creenan. As the Department of Environmental Conservation and Environmental Protection Agency continue testing for radioactive materials in Niagara County, State Senator Robert Ort has introduced a Superfund program change to help local residents impacted by testing. The new bill would have nuclear and radioactive waste be considered hazardous waste so that, I'm sorry, the print is really not very clear here, so that impacted sites can be remediated using funds from the Hazardous Waste Superfund program. State law currently does not cover radioactive contamination, so a superfund cannot be declared for such remediation. Quoting, making crucial changes to the state superfund law to include the radiological materials discovered in Niagara County will allow the DEC to use all the resources available to them to assist homeowners during this process, said Ort. Continuing the quotation, it is paramount these amendments are made to ensure that additional resources be made available for my constituents affected by radiological contamination. The bill is currently in committee. And I'll abbreviate that article there. From page 2 of the August 6th issue, County Legislator launches Home Safety Initiative. Sam Ferrugia, partnering with County Health Department, Falls Fire Department, and Red Cross. Niagara County Legislator Sam Ferrugia is working with the Niagara County Department of Health, Niagara Falls Fire Department, and American Red Cross to bring the Sound the Alarm Home Fire Safety Campaign to Niagara Falls. As part of the initiative, teams of Niagara Falls firefighters, including Ferrugia, will join public health professionals and Red Cross volunteers to go door to door in targeted neighborhoods, installing free smoke alarms and educating residents on home fire prevention. Smoke alarms save lives, but only if they're working, he said. As a firefighter, I've responded to fires where a working smoke alarm gave families the precious seconds they needed to escape. As a county legislator, I believe one of the best investments we can make is preventing emergencies before they happen. Oh, the effort will take place from 9:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Monday. Apparently, this is now in the past, so I'll abbreviate that article right there. From page 4 of the August 6th issue of the Union Sun and Journal, man pleads guilty to selling fentanyl linked to Lockport death. Victim died in the city in 2022. A Buffalo man has pleaded guilty to his role in the overdose death of a Lockport man in 2022. Stanley B. Wallace, 36, of Buffalo, pleaded guilty before U.S. District Judge John L. Sinatra Jr. to distribution of fentanyl, which carries a maximum penalty of 20 years and a fine of $1 million. In May 2022, three individuals drove to a Shrek Avenue residence. One of the individuals went inside and purchased a quantity of blue fentanyl pills from Spitz. Who is Spitz? Not yet mentioned in this article. That individual then gave the pills purchased from Spitz to the individual identified as BB, who drove to the Shrek Avenue residence. After leaving Bibi, one of the other individuals consumed one of the pills and then texted Bibi, "I honestly think our straight fent potent as expletive. I'm high out of my mind. Please don't sniff a quarter of that straight, bro. Don't want you to OD." That's what it said. It was a text. The following day, BB was found dead in his Lockport residence, I guess of an overdose. Investigators executed a search warrant at the hotel room where the other two individuals were staying and recovered two blue pills and two partial blue pills that tested positive for fentanyl. A search warrant was then executed at the Shrek Avenue residence where law enforcement recovered drug paraphernalia. The case was prosecuted by Assistant U.S. Attorney Louis A. Testani. The plea is the result of an investigation by Homeland Security Investigations under the direction of Acting Special Agent in Charge Anthony Patrone and the Niagara County Sheriff's Office under the direction of Sheriff Michael Felicetti. Sentencing is scheduled for November 30th before Judge Sinatra. Still not clear who Spitz might be, but apparently it is Stanley B. Wallace. From the opinions page, a letter to the editor, which is actually an announcement of cancer screenings. Cancer screenings available. In the fight against cancer, finding it early or preventing it is the key to living a longer, healthier life. Cancer screening can find cancer early when treatment works best, and screening for cervical and colorectal cancer can stop cancer from starting. Screening is a much easier and less expensive way to save lives than treatment. The State Department of Health leads statewide efforts to prevent or catch to prevent or catch cancer at the earliest stage. Its cornerstone initiative, the Cancer Services Program, CSP, offers free breast, cervical, and colorectal cancer screening to New Yorkers who lack health insurance. There is a network of programs serving every county and borough of New York. You can call 1-866-442-CANCER or 1-866-442-2262 to be connected to a cancer services program near you. The call is free and operators take calls 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'll abbreviate that right there, but again, the phone number for the cancer screening service, free cancer screening service, is 1-866-442-2262. That letter is from Colleen Jackson, Cancer Services Program of Northeastern New York. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Lockport Union Sun and Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. I have about a week's worth of newspapers here, so I'm abbreviating most of the articles, but if you wish to hear the remainder of any article, please do call. The number here is 716-821-5555, and you can have the remainder of any article read to you. Okay, moving now to the Saturday and Sunday paper of August 8th and 9th. Wastewater treatment plant suffers damage from flooding. City waiting for parts for repairs. Costs estimates unknown. Heidi Trushel Light is the author of this article. City wastewater treatment plant operators are coordinating repairs to the plant's screening and grit removal system that suffered major damage during nearly 5 inches of rain last weekend. At the Common Council's public work session Wednesday, Mayor John Lombardi III said the plant is currently not in compliance with regulations as it waits for custom-made parts to become available. Cost estimates for the repairs were not released. Quoting, "We are weeks away from having the plant back to full capacity," Lombardi said. "All federal and state agencies we report to are aware of our concerns and the situation." I'll abbreviate that one right there. Still from the front page of the August 8th, 9th issue, "Town looks to improve municipal complex. Possible building expansions and relocation of water and sewer departments being eyed." The town of Lockport recently approved a $25,000 contract with Wendell Companies, that's the name of the company, Wendell Companies, to conduct a planning study for infrastructure improvements at the 6564 Deisinger Road complex and an addition at Day Road Park. We're doing a study to evaluate building renovations or extensions on the town hall campus, said Robert Clavoon, town engineer with Wendell Companies. "It's basically for consolidating all the services from building inspection and water and sewer and placing it by town hall. Our civil teams will be working with Pat Dufour and department heads to craft that program. We're going to put that all into a report and let the town board know what the anticipated costs will be. One goal is to bring the water and sewer department, now located at 6200 Robinson Road, to the Deisinger Road location for easier coordination of projects with the highway department." And I've abbreviated that article. From page 2 of the August 8th and 9th issue, "Man struck, killed on Niagara Falls Boulevard Thursday. Niagara Falls police investigators looking for witnesses to crash." For witnesses to the crash. A 50-year-old man was killed Thursday night after being struck by a vehicle while in the roadway on Niagara Falls Boulevard, according to Niagara Falls police. The collision occurred on the 8100 block of the boulevard about 9:30 p.m. A 2016 Jeep, driven by an 18-year-old female from the town of Niagara, was heading west on the boulevard when it struck a 50-year-old man in the roadway. The man was thrown forward and sustained life-threatening injuries. He was rushed to Niagara Falls Memorial Medical Center, where he died from his injuries. Skipping a little bit, "Any witnesses to the crash are asked to contact the Crash Investigation Unit at 716-286-4565 or at the non-emergency number at 716-286-4711. Another accident on the same page. "Struck utility pole Friday disables area traffic lights. Driver of pickup transported to local hospital after crash." Traffic lights in central Niagara County were without power Friday after a driver struck a utility pole in Cambria. Cambria Fire Chief Roger Schrader said a driver in his 40s lost control of his pickup truck on Route 31 between Sabera and Meal Roads, possibly these are mispronounced, but looks like Sabera and Meal Roads, on Friday morning. Schrader said the vehicle rolled after entering the ditch and struck a utility pole that is a main line for power distribution in the Lockport, Sanborn, and Pendleton areas. Schrader said the driver, whose name was withheld, was conscious and transported by an ambulance to a local hospital. There were no passengers or other vehicles involved. Schrader said he did not believe driving conditions were a factor in the accident. And I'll abbreviate that one right there. This next article from page 3 of the August 8th and 9th issue announces several events that our past, but I will read the beginning of it and skip the events that are now in the past. You may be interested in the Dale Association. Dale Association celebrates 75 years, and you are invited, but those events have now passed. The start of something wonderful happened 75 years ago. A group of clergy members and social workers recognized a simple but important need. Older adults deserved opportunities to stay active, social, and engaged. From that vision, the Dale Association was born. Founded in 1951 as the Golden Age Club, the Dale Association has grown and evolved alongside the needs of our community. In 1965, the organization was incorporated as Lockport Senior Citizens Center, and in 1995, it proudly adopted the name the Dale Association in honor of our first paid executive director, Elizabeth Betty Dale. Since 1974, the Dale Association has also provided adult mental health services, expanding our mission to serve even more members of the community. Today, the Dale Association is a comprehensive human service organization with specialized programs and services for adults of all ages. Each day, our building comes alive with exercise classes, games, lunches, education programs, volunteer opportunities, trips, musical memory cafe, support groups, and countless moments of laughter and friendship. What you may not see is that we also provide vital services including Memory Minders Dementia Care, Senior Advice Services, the Care Telephone Reassurance Program, Transportation, Caregiver Support, Programs for Individuals with Vision and Hearing Loss, Information and Referrals, and so much more. Each service has the ultimate goal of enhancing quality of life. So there were some special events, but they all took place before August, up to August 15th. Going on now to the Tuesday, August 11th issue of the Union Sun and Journal. Page 1, Bewley Building on the agenda Wednesday. Public hearing rezoning vote coming up for structure at 15% occupancy. This is a building in downtown Lockport. A $66 million downtown historic renovation project could be at stake Wednesday when the Common Council of Lockport hears public comments and votes on whether to rezone the Bewley Building's parking lot. Pathstone Development, which has proposed to renovate the Bewley Building into 100 affordable apartments, seeks to change the parking lot's zoning from mixed light industrial to mixed use downtown in order to build a fire code compliant stairwell on the building's wall. Castello Bewley LLC still owns the building and has entered into a purchase agreement with Pathstone Development to convey the property on the date the developer closes with the New York State Housing Finance Agency at the end of the year. With a number of storefront windows boarded up, Matt Martin, property manager for Castello Bewley, said Monday that the building is at 15% occupancy. Skipping to a paragraph in the middle of this article, individuals who spoke to the council in favor of the Pathstones project say the apartments are in demand and that the tenants will increase patronage of downtown businesses. After a tour this spring of an apartment building renovated by Pathstone in Albion, Catherine Fogel, 4th Ward Alderman, came away impressed. It was beautiful, she said. I would be willing to live there with those big windows. But I guess that's about the development in Albion by Pathstone. Okay, I'll cut that article there. Still page one of the August 11th issue. Fruitful history, UB working on public green space plan in Medina by Lori Kaiser. Two University of Buffalo professors are leading a public ecological project in Medina, which will honor the agricultural, cultural, and economic history of Western New York. Joyce Huang, H-W-A-N-G, professor of architecture in the School of Architecture and Planning, and Mishwana Goeman, PhD, professor and chair of the Department of Indigenous Studies, have received a $195,000 grant from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation to plan a public space on land owned by New York State. It will involve a cultural and biological history of the site, particularly connected to apples and other native fruits, and will feature public art in the form of hybrid trees created by renowned artist Sam Van Aken, MFA, Master Fine Arts, Associate Professor of Art at Syracuse University. Quoting, "The project aims to create a public landscape and living archive that focuses on the crucial role that apples have played in New York's transformation through a long engagement in Haudenosaunee history, colonization, immigration, and commerce," Huang says. "As one of the most diverse fruit-growing states, New York has historically become the home to hundreds of apple varieties, many of which have been lost due to industrialization, monoculture farming, and changing market demands," end quote. Skipping a little bit, the public landscape will be built on 2 acres located along the Erie Canal that's close to the Tonawanda Band of Seneca Nation. Once home to a concrete plant, the space is adjacent to a larger capital project that the New York Power Authority is undertaking to renovate the Empire State Trail, adding accessible walkways and bike paths along the canal. Okay, I will abbreviate that one right there. Still from the front page, Amazon asking county IDA for $3 million more in incentives. Project has already been awarded nearly $124 million by Robert Creenan. With its new Niagara County Fulfillment Center at 8995 Lockport Road almost ready to open, Amazon is requesting an additional $3 million in sales tax incentives from the Niagara County Industrial Development Agency. In a letter sent to the agency last week, Amazon's Director of Economic Development, Brad Griggs, asked that the amount of incentives be increased from $26 million to $29 million. Griggs said that since the county's IDA initial approval of nearly $124 million in various tax incentives, the construction scope increased due to advancements in material handling equipment systems and updates to the new generation facility design, which resulted in $37.5 million in additional purchases beyond what was stated in Amazon's original application. That amount would put construction costs for the town of Niagara Center at around $587.5 million. The matter will be considered at this Wednesday's IDA meeting. And I guess that's a good place to stop. From page 2 of this August 11th issue, Law Enforcement Academy graduates 21 new recruits. Five New Niagara County Sheriff's Deputies Among Graduates by Rick Pfeiffer. Sanborn. One of the largest classes in recent memory recently completed training at the Niagara County Law Enforcement Academy. A class of 21 recruits received their certifications at the Academy's 86th graduation. The Niagara Falls Police Department will add 5 new officers, while the Niagara County Sheriff's Office will add 5 new deputies. The Genesee County Sheriff's Office graduated 3 new deputies, and the Orleans County Sheriff's Office added 1. Rounding out the class were 2 new officers with the Niagara Frontier Transportation Authority, NFTA, with the Niagara Frontier Transportation Authority Police Department, and individual officers with the Batavia, Lockport, SUNY Niagara, and Erie County Medical Center Police Departments. The class also included 1 pre-employment recruit. Okay. Abbreviating there. Also, same page, page 2. County presents $15,000 to Niagara Aerospace Museum. It says country presents. I think it's county. Community Partnership Fund Award will support preservation and future growth. Niagara County Legislature Majority Leader Randy Bratt and Deputy Majority Leader Christopher McKimmy presented a $15,000 Community Partnership Fund grant to the Niagara Aerospace Museum. Executive Director Lindsay Poloncarz, along with board members Don Irwin and Allison O'Connor, accepted the check on behalf of the museum. The funding will help the museum to retain a curator to professionally catalog and inventory its collection of aerospace artifacts, helping preserve the collection while positioning the museum for future growth and opportunity. Quoting, "The Niagara Aerospace Museum preserves an important part of Western New York's history, and as an Air Force veteran, that mission is especially important to me," said McKimmy. "I have vivid memories of visiting the museum as a Civil Air Patrol cadet when it was located in the former Carborundum Center on 4th Street. Preserving our rich aerospace history and making it accessible to future generations is something I'm proud to support." And I'll abbreviate that article. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Lockport Union, Sun, and Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. I abbreviate many articles, but I give you the page and date, so please feel free, if you would like to hear the remaining content of any article, to call the Radio Reading Service at 716-821-5555. Another award, this article from page 3 of the August 11th issue, E&R Machine Recognized by County, the first recognized neighborhood business of the month. The Niagara County Legislature honored E&R Machine as its inaugural Neighborhood Business of the Month. The company, located on Grand Street in Lockport, is a precision CNC machining and contract manufacturing firm serving a wide array of industries. The award was presented to Niagara County legislators Tony Namey and Rick Abbott, and Niagara County Economic Development Commissioner Andrea Klychek. E&R Machine has been in business for over 6 decades, celebrating its 65th anniversary earlier this year. It's a family-owned business, with President Timothy Sauls representing the third generation in charge. Legislator Tony Namey said E&R Machine was chosen for this award based on its longevity, reputation, and commitment to the community. Quoting Namey, "Manufacturing is a highly competitive business, and the fact that E&R has been successful for 65 years right here in Niagara County is a testament to hard work and sound management, said Namie. We also loved the fact that in the nomination for this award, the company was cited for treating all employees like family with tremendous support and compassion. I'll quit that article at that point. As we move forward in the Lockport Union Sun and Journal, here's another article on the Bewley building changes. In the issue from August 11th, I read about the Bewley building, and here is another article from the Thursday, August 13th issue of the Union Sun and Journal. The title of the article, the headline, is Bewley Vote. Parking lot rezoning fails, with Fogle alone in voting yes. I guess that tells you the answer. Following a public hearing with nearly 70 people in attendance Wednesday, Catherine Fogle, 4th Ward Alderman, was the only member of the Common Council to vote in favor of rezoning the Bewley building's parking lot. While some attempted to frame the issue as strictly a legal designation, most residents who spoke immediately acknowledged that the zoning question wouldn't exist without Pathstone Development's intent to renovate the 1929 Bewley building into 100 affordable apartments. The same confusion about whether the apartment building would create Section 8 housing resurfaced with Joshua Frass, Director of Real Estate Development for Pathstone Development Corporation, responding that the term, quoting, has been used as a weapon against this request, end quote. Like others at the microphone, Frass spoke about the potential for the Bewley building to remain vacant if the proposed project did not move forward. Quoting, a vacant building does no favors to the city of Lockport, he said. The insinuation that a vacant building is better for Lockport is extremely misguided. How has that worked out for the Lockport Hospital, the F&M building, the infirmary, and the mall on Main Street, and many, many other buildings? Okay, hang on a second while I turn the page. Skipping some of the middle part of this article and going toward to the end, to the speaker's comments. Many speakers against the rezoning and the Pathstone housing project expressed concerns about it increasing the number of low-income residents. Liz Maiolo, owner of Pecoraro Salon on Walnut Street, said, quoting, I've seen this city just disintegrate. Maiolo said she is frustrated by sometimes seeing, quoting again, 5 or 6 wheelchairs across from Lock 34. It sickens me, Maiolo said. Other businesses have moved out because of all the riffraff that's around. Perhaps the most heated testimony came from resident Jessica Dix, who supported the creation of additional housing. Quoting, people like myself, a young professional, want to move out, she said. Providing people with homes will make the place better for tourists. It really is a win-win. Pathstone has done everything right, and we're not going to get another opportunity like this. This generation is watching. Please don't disappoint me. Following the vote, Matt Martin, property manager for the Bewley building, said, the city and council clearly want a vacant building. About another downtown Lockport building, still the front page of the August 13th issue, F&M Development seeks IDA incentives. The F&M building is at 116 Main Street. Looking for $1.3 million in benefits for downtown project. by Robert Creenan. Now that its plans for renovating Lockport's F&M building are underway, Severino Companies is looking to get some tax incentives to help with the $12.6 million project. The Buffalo real estate firm is looking for around $1.3 million in various benefits as it looks to turn the former office building and neighboring former Frontier Mall into 16 market-rate apartments and retail space. That amount is made up of $994,964 in property tax exemptions, $347,758 in sales tax exemptions, and $23,656 in mortgage recording tax exemptions. Quoting, "I think it's going to blend really well into that area," said Rob Severino, who with his brother Sam applied for the incentives through their company. Moose and Squirrel Holdings, LLC. "The real benefit is activating Main Street. We want to bring in a new commercial space to that area." Dating back to 1905, the six-story F&M building at 116 Main Street had been vacant for the past 40 years, having previously been used as office space. The Severinos bought the property this past March for $250,000, getting approval to be, and now I must turn the page. The Severinos bought the property this past March for $250,000, getting approval to be included in the National Register of Historic Places. The first floor would have 1,284 square feet for a commercial tenant, with entry coming in from Main and Locust Streets. There will also be a one-bedroom unit featuring a first-floor living room and a second-floor mezzanine for a bedroom and bath. The other five floors of the building would have one two-bedroom unit and two one-bedroom units, each with an identical layout featuring a kitchen space, full bathrooms, and an in-unit washer and dryer. In the neighboring 120 Main Street, the 31,800 square feet would be divided for three uses. Around 10,000 square feet facing Frontier Place would hold 22 off-street parking spaces for the 116 Main Street tenants. Another 1,632 square feet would house the mechanic and utilities required for the building. The remaining 16,606 square feet facing East Main Street would be divided into five leasable commercial spaces. And I'll abbreviate that article at this point. Also on the front page of the Thursday, August 13 issue, public celebration to mark opening of Canaan Civic Arena. I'm sorry, I don't know whether it's Canaan or Keenan, not being from Lockport, but Canaan is what I'm going to say, K-E-N-A-N, possibly Keenan. September 5th event will feature music, art, and vendors. The Canaan Civic Arena will open its new arena September 5th with a public celebration of music, art, and sports that have been its hallmark for decades. The day of free activities for the community, running from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on September 5th, will begin with a ribbon cutting, followed by a full slate of entertainment and activity throughout the area and across the Canaan Center campus. Musician Dave Turner will perform at 11 a.m., followed by the Strictly Hip at 1:30 p.m. Local artist Nikki Millie will paint a mural throughout the day and raffle off an original painting, with proceeds split between Millie and the Canaan Center. The arena's new indoor turf field and sport courts get their first action from the community, with local youth sports teams playing on the schedule throughout the day. The event marks the completion of a $15.5 million, 64,200 square foot arena next to the original venue adjacent to Beatty Avenue. And again, I'm not sure if it's Beatty, Beatty, B-E-A-T-T-I-E. Built to host large-scale events and gatherings, the Canaan Civic Arena will serve as the largest event space in Niagara County and one of the largest in Western New York, said Bill Patty, the Canaan Center's executive director. The new facility houses a fitness center, turf field, sport courts, concessions, classrooms, a computer lab, community rooms, and dance and art studios. More than 75 local vendors will set up shop outside, with the celebration moving indoors to the old arena in case of rain. That original arena space will also host a Canaan Arena yard sale, offering surplus items and souvenirs from the building's history. I'll abbreviate that article there with the reminder that these events will take place on Saturday, September 5th, between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. at the Canaan Civic Arena. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Lockport Union Sun and Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Abbreviated articles you can hear the remainder of the article by calling the Radio Reading Service at 716-821-5555, and staff will read the remaining contents of any article to you. Page 2 of the August 15th issue, rabies vaccine baiting returns to Niagara County. Oral vaccines to be distributed by air and ground through September. Oral rabies vaccine baits, oral rabies vaccine baits will again be distributed across Niagara County and Western New York through September. The effort is part of a nationwide cooperative program conducted by the United States Department of Agriculture Wildlife Services Program to prevent the spread of wildlife rabies in the eastern United States. The late summer distribution is in addition to the spring distribution completed in May to strengthen regional rabies prevention. Baiting will occur through aerial distribution using low-flying fixed-wing aircraft, helicopters, and ground baiting by hand in select areas. Distribution is weather-dependent and may be adjusted due to inclement conditions. Just to give you some dates, fixed-wing aircraft operations are scheduled through August 21st. Helicopter operations are scheduled for September 14th through the 19th, and ground baiting is scheduled through August 24th. That will take place in urban areas, with approximately 190 bait stations deployed in Niagara Falls. Wildlife, including foxes, skunks, raccoons, and woodchucks, are vaccinated against rabies when they eat the vaccine that's contained in the baits. The baits are about the size of a matchbox and are comprised of vegetable shortening, wax, icing sugar, vegetable oil, and flavoring. The baits are not harmful to humans or pets. However, they should not be handled. If baits are found in areas where children or pets play, they may be moved using gloves or a plastic bag. And for additional information, you can call Wildlife Services, USDA Wildlife Services, at 1-866-487-3297. Moving now to the Saturday and Sunday issue of the Union Sun and Journal, Saturday and Sunday, August 15th and 16th. I'm reading this on the 20th. Weathering the rain. Crops are coming in as farmers rebound from wet summer. Heidi Truschel Light. heavy rainfall across Niagara County this summer has added more bumps and curves to the roller coaster of farming. As with all things farming, weather impacts have varied from town to town, often in keeping with local soil types and the degree of slope. While Kyle Siebert's Cambria Produce Farm is located just up Ridge Road from acreage that has been underwater for days, he said he was going to turn on irrigation on Friday afternoon. "There's no standing water anymore on the property right now," Siebert said. While he received a total of 10 inches of rain from July 18th to last week, Siebert said his fields along Route 104 are sand and gravel and were thoroughly dry. Fields farther downslope and near 12 Mile Creek had some wet areas, he said. Quoting, "For a while it was back-to-back 2 inches and then an inch and three-quarters of rain," Siebert said. "The water had nowhere to go. Where the creek overflowed, it might have caught a few rows. In the lower spots of different fields, some cabbage and corn was hit, but not a total loss of everything. We'll be okay. Broccoli and cauliflower are not looking bad. It could have been worse." Grower Bo Payne of R&K Veggie Company in Gasport had a different experience. Quoting, "We got a little over 9 inches in 2 weeks," he said. "This is definitely the most rain in July that we've encountered in years. It pretty much drowned our lower fields. We're backed up to the Heartland Swamp, so it's tough for the water to get off the lower field," end quote. Payne said 5 acres of tomatoes and peppers, nearly half of his production fields, were a loss. His higher ground is yielding well, he said, with peppers, zucchini, and yellow squash coming in disease-free. Max Russell, vice president of the Niagara Farm Bureau, said he's hearing from most farmers that they have plant diseases related to dampness. Under control because of preventive programs. And I'll abbreviate that article there. You might be interested in the plight of the beluga whales who were left in limbo when Marineland, Niagara Falls, Ontario, closed. Here's an article from page 4. 4 more Marineland belugas arrive at Chicago Aquarium by Sybil Mays Osterman. Chicago. 4 more belugas have arrived at a Chicago aquarium Thursday as part of a plan to move Canada's last remaining captive whales from a shuttered theme park to aquariums in the United States and Spain. The 4 whales, named Caspian, Pikachu, Rain, and Secord, were the second group of belugas sent to Chicago's Shedd Aquarium from Marineland from Niagara Falls, Ontario, after an initial 4 arrived in July. They are among a total of 30 whales and 4 dolphins that will be transported from Marineland after the Canadian government approved of the rescue plan, which might have saved them from mass euthanasia. As of early August, 17 whales remained at Marineland to be moved, though officials had not announced a timeline. Marineland announced in early 2023 that it was for sale and closed to the public in late summer 2024. 20 whales, 19 belugas, and 1 killer whale have died at Marineland since 2019, according to provincial government data obtained through freedom of information laws and official statements. And I will abbreviate that one there. Still from page 1 of the August 15th, 16th Union Sun and Journal. Helner moving forward in Falls. Carborundum building project awarded $1.65 million from County IDA. The Niagara County Industrial Development Agency granted nearly $3.65 million in property tax exemptions to 2 projects this week. One to redevelop the former Carborundum building on Hyde Park Boulevard, and the other and the other, turning the page, to build new housing on Porter Road. Middleport-based Hellner Development Company received $1.65 million for turning the Carborundum facility into new manufacturing and warehouse space. The $2.14 million project plans to create 10 new jobs with a salary range of $40,000 to $80,000. CEO Roland Hellner had previously said he had conversations with potential site tenants, though he did not say who they were. They had gotten interest in all kinds of businesses, mostly in warehousing. Site renovations would take 2 years to complete. The other roughly $2 million in incentives is for the West Seneca-based Peter Serto Corporation to build 22 new market-rate apartments at 5700 and 5710 Porter Road in the town of Niagara. The $7.13 million development would construct two new buildings, each with 11 units. And I'm afraid I'm out of time. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from current issues of the Lockport Union Sun and Journal. We read from the Lockport Union Sun and Journal every Saturday at 5 p.m. Your reader today has been Pat Connolly. Thank you for listening.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have the Jamestown Post-Journal. At 7 o'clock, we got the Niagara Falls Review. And at 8 o'clock, we have the Off-Duty from the Wall Street Journal. Stay with us for these readings and more. You're listening to the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Radio readers broadcast daily readings 24 hours a day of newspapers, magazines, and books to area people who are blind or have a print disability who are provided reading radios. Our broadcast signal is provided at no charge by WNED. Radio reading broadcasts throughout the city of Buffalo, Western New York, and Southern Ontario's Niagara Peninsula. For more information on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, call us at 716-821-5555. following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability